Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this Tuesday morning. Hope everybody's having a good day to this point. Tell us what you know. Coming up in about 45 minutes, $25 gift card to Party Foul is on the line, but you'll have to participate. Like I said, that's in about 45 minutes. Just tell us what you know. That's all we're asking. By the way, you can stream us from anywhere. Download the Game Nashville app, enable Alexa Skill or Google Home, and ask it to play 102.5 The Game, or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. It'll be the Titans and the Broncos. Monday Night Football. We're going to learn a little bit more about their opponent here very, very shortly.
Yeah, we're in a little bit of a stall. Brandon Cristal is going to join us. He's trying to get out of a dead zone. He had just left his house, so he's going to be calling us back in just a second to talk about that. But I'm curious to get his thoughts on this year's Broncos team, but most notably how somebody we got to know quite well is doing and in preparing for this game, and that being Jarrell Casey. His number, Jadeveon Clowney got his number, so I'm sure that adds a little fuel to the fire, but I'm looking forward to that matchup.
Speaking of 99, I saw that Clowney jerseys were already online being sold.
Oh, yeah, they turned around fast.
So they were
it's almost like they knew.
I think they were ready. Yeah. They were ready for him. There were signs for months. Remember that the mysterious picture of Clowney with the Titans uniform on in the video
game? Yeah,
that
was Madden.
Yeah. Yep. So I think you know, looking back, there was that mutual interest throughout. It was just a matter of waiting it out. And you got to give the Titans credit for being patient and getting what they wanted all along.
Going back to the Clowney, to how much is he going to play the first few weeks? Darren, I remember when we were having the Tom Brady conversation, and you brought up that, well, you know, how much talk has happened behind the scenes because they're, you know, Vrabel and Tom are friends. You know, are they going over some things? Is there, how much of that do you think was happening? Because I think a lot of it was happening with Clowney. So, you know, you've asked the question of what's changed. Well, he didn't like camp, so that seems very clear. How much has there been Vrabel saying, "Hey, JD, you know what's up? You know how we do this, how we did this in Houston. You know, we got these type," maybe not going over the playbook, but some of that of maybe brush up on some of this stuff because we do that here. I think he's going to be more ready than people might think.
That is not in question. That to me is not what it's about. It's just simply about the guy's had no work on the field at all. And right. He has a history of what? Injuries. I mean, it's not about learning the playbook. That to me is not
a
question.
I agree.
It's all about game shape and conditioning, man. We're not talking about the playbook.
And the worst thing you could do is throw him out there too much too early and increase the chances that he's on the shelf. I would try to think long term and build slowly. That would be me.
Let's go out to Denver. Brandon Cristal is on the line with us, Broncos insider, KOA radio out there. Brandon, how you doing?
Doing good, guys. I am driving through I guess it's not an ice storm yet. It's just kind of freezing rain. It's going to be snow here in the next hour or so, 2 hours. So by the time I leave Broncos practice, less snow on the ground. It was 93 degrees yesterday.
Okay.
So.
Did they move their camp to Alaska?
Sorry, yeah.
Well, they're still in Denver?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. But look, we've got all these wildfires all across Colorado, just like they have in California, too. So the freezing rain and even the snow, which nobody wants snow in September typically, we'll take it right now just to put all those wildfires out.
Wow. So are they predicting snow for Monday Night Football in 6 days?
No, I think.
Can you imagine opening day?
I think it's going to be in the low 80s here coming up. But 2 years ago when they played the Rams October 12th-ish, give or take, whatever that Sunday was, it snowed a bunch on Saturday. There was still snow all around the field, not on the field, and it was the coldest game of the year. It was October 12th. None of the December games or even November games were as cold as that day in October. So we get weird weather around here is the bottom line, but usually a lot of sunshine. It's going to be great weather next week for Monday Night Football.
Is there any talk that the Broncos are thinking about this game, just forfeiting this game, considering the Titans signed Clowney, that it's they don't even want to attempt the game now? Any talk of that at all?
Well, it's funny, despite that, and maybe right tackle being the biggest question mark on the entire roster in terms of the player who's there now, Elijah Wilkinson, who started a bunch last year but just wasn't very consistent, and then DeMar Dotson backing him up at 34 years old with 100-and-something starts. There's a reason the Bucs didn't resign a starting right tackle. So I don't think they're gonna forfeit. I do think the Clowney addition will be good when he's good, and the fact he played his best football under Vrabel is a good thing. But I talked to a reporter who covered the Texans for a long time and told me one week he was at Clowney's locker on Monday, and Clowney says, "Hey, who are we playing this week?" And he says, "Oh, the Bills." He goes, "Oh, y'all won't be talking to me Sunday then." Basically indicating that he wasn't expecting to be player of the game or to sack whoever the quarterback was at the time. I don't know if it was Tyrod Taylor even before that. So I think it's stories like that that probably kept the market flatter for Clowney. But at the end of the day, when you look at the talent, it's almost unmatched when he's into it, right? The problem is making sure he's there consistent every week for 17 games. I guess my question for you guys, not that it's my interview, do Titans fans care that the money Jarrell Casey was supposed to get and the jersey number now both went to Clowney?
No. Well, I think what they care about, it's a fair question, is if you trade away Casey and you don't have Clowney, then people are going to be saying, what were you exactly saving that money for?
Right.
Was it for your kicker? You know, I mean, sure. I think this is the whole whenever you do something like this, as by the way, we're just glad this story is over. Like we're just tired of talking about it. Just like Mike Vrabel, who would basically drop his head every Zoom call when this question was asked because he was tired of it. But you couldn't get away from it. It's not going to go away until something happens. But I think the whole point of all of this is getting rid of Casey. It was like, it's got to be to land a guy like Clowney. I mean, it's just got to be. So, to me, the bigger thing would have been if he ends up in New Orleans or Seattle or somewhere else, you probably would have had some pretty loud voices from the fan base going, you got rid of Casey for what again? And I think that's what would have happened.
Especially because he just seems like such a great guy. I know how big he was in the community. You know, I used to MC Wesley Woodyard's charity events, so he was the first person that I reached out to when the trade went down, and obviously teammates like other teammates, but it sounded like these guys really were great.
We may be going in another bad area for Brandon. Is he there?
Okay. I'm really going against, you know, guys like, oh, you got me, guys?
Yeah, you went away for a bit.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, sorry, there's a couple dead spots. Casey's been really, really good in training camp. Going against Dalton Risner and Graham Glasgow every day, and we'll see how he fits into this Vic Fangio defense. It may not be ideal for his build necessarily with what Vic likes to do in terms of sliding him up and down the D line, but Casey just makes plays, man. He doesn't know any other way to play football other than to play hard and get the backfield.
The two guys in the backfield, how is this going to play out? I mean, they obviously added a guy like Melvin Gordon. Is this a 50-50 split? Is somebody going to get the bulk of the carries? How are they going to use their two backs?
Well, I think, and it's hard to really gauge, Melvin Gordon aggravated his ribs in training camp and missed about a week, give or take, and then was kind of eased back in. He was working back steadily with the ones the last couple days. In the last practice we got to see Friday night, they went under the lights in the stadium just to get used to what that'll look like. He was out there, and it seemed about a 50-50 split. I would be nervous if there's anybody that has fantasy drafts. I've got two tonight and one more tomorrow, and I've already had a couple. I didn't take either of those backs, not because I don't think they'll be productive when they're on the field. It's because I'm not exactly sure how it's going to shake out. I don't think they are either. I don't know if Pat Shurmur and Vic Fangio and Kirk Smotkin, the running backs coach, have sat down and really mapped it out. I think Philip Lindsay, in the back of his mind, because he told us now twice in the few weeks that we've talked to him since camp started, he doesn't need 20 touches to get going. He just needs a play to be blocked, well, one good play, and he'll go off. So I don't know if he's Jedi mind-tricking himself because he thinks that Gordon's going to get a little more of the work. I don't think it'll be Gordon 85%, Lindsay 15%. I would think that if it's split, it's closer to 60-40 years, maybe, you know, 63-37, if my math is right on that. And then they may even mix in Royce Freeman, who was just in year three, just to be a change of pace a little bit, good in pass pro, okay in short yardage, not as good as Gordon. So I guess Gordon is who I would expect to see more snaps on the field and maybe a few more touches, but I don't think it's going to be a huge, huge margin. Of course, you know, we could talk on Tuesday, and I could be really wrong.
We're talking to Brandon Kristol. He reports for the Broncos for KOA out in Denver, Colorado. Of course, the Titans open the season out there next Monday. So, Brandon, I'm sure you've been talking about it all summer. Drew Lock, is he ready to take the next step forward? Showed some signs by the end of last year. They seem to be giving him the reins right now. How's he looked?
He's looked really good. Now, he looks like a second-year quarterback 20, and this is the highest paid defense in football. So, obviously, we're talking about Casey. You got Von Miller, you got Bradley Chubb back. I don't know if Bradley Chubb's at 100% yet. Surprised if you see Jeremiah Tatu and Malik Reed in there for Bradley Chubb some next week. They've got two of the best safeties in football, Will Justin Simmons, who was second team all pro, Kareem Jackson, who obviously, and they know from all his years as a corner with the Texans, is fitting really well at safety. A.J. Boye comes over from the Jags. He's obviously a solid player. Don't know if he's elite, but we'll find out, replacing Chris Harris. And they get Bryce Callahan back. So they've got a really good defense to go against Drew Lock every day. And Drew Lock's held his own. He's thrown the ball to Cortland Sutton plenty. Jerry Jeudy is a guy that would excite me if people are looking for a late flyer in their fantasy draft and you're debating between him or Henry Ruggs or CeeDee Lamb. There's a reason most people had him as the top receiver on their draft board. He catches everything thrown to him. He gets open against veteran corners easily and makes plays. But they've surrounded Drew Lock with all these weapons to make it easier for him. He also obviously has Noah Fant, the first rounder from a year ago. Plus, they added his favorite target, the tight end Albert O, who played at Missouri, who caught 17 touchdowns from Drew in 18 games together. Jake Butt's on the roster still. They trade for or sign Nick Manette. So they've got, you know, the two backs y'all mentioned, plus all these pass catchers to make his life easier. But I think he's got a chance. I'm not ready to put him in Canton, just like the Banjo said last year after he won one or two games. But he does stuff where you're like, okay, we just haven't seen that around here. Maybe since Jake Plummer was rolling right and just flipping the ball to, you know, whoever the closest guy was or even the farthest guy was, and the ball was getting there. Or maybe even Drew's boss, Jim Elway, when he, you know, was running to his right and just throwing the ball downfield like a flick of the wrist. I can see Patrick Mahomes do so much. And I'm not saying he has Patrick Mahomes' arm, but I'd imagine he's in your upper category of arm tiers or pretty close. And he's got a swag about him that it's warranted as long as they win. Otherwise, it just seems kind of silly, but this kid was the best high school basketball player and high school football player in Kansas City. So he's used to kind of walking into a room and thinking highly of himself. But his teammates love him across the board, regardless of demographics or anything else. So I think he's got a chance. And because I've been throwing all these fantasy things at you guys, he might be worth as your second quarterback at this point, because you got to see just how does he adjust in year two with another offense. But he's had six offensive coordinators in 7 years going back to his last year of high school. So he's used to having to pick up a new playbook.
Brandon Kristol is with us talking Broncos, KOA, Colorado. So speaking of offensive coordinators, how have you seen him gel, Drew Lock gel with Pat Shurmur and what Pat Shurmur's trying to do on offense?
Well, I definitely see Pat Shurmur get frustrated from time to time, which makes me think that's maybe a good sign and a bad sign, right? That, you know, he doesn't have it all down. And so the fact that Shurmur's still getting mad about little things like Drew not running up in situational drill to stop the clock or whatever, saw a reaction to that here pretty recently. And I do think that Pat tried to make it easy on Drew by keeping as much of the terminology the same as he could. And that's the thing is, even though Rich Scangarello was running Kyle Shanahan's version of his dad and Gary Kubiak's version of the West Coast offense that they learned under Bill Walsh, well, Pat Shurmur is running his version of Andy Reid's version of that offense that he learned under Bill Walsh and Bill Walsh's disciples, I guess, more accurately. So a lot of it is still, it's football, right? There's only so many things you can call something. But a lot of it was common enough that Shurmur could keep the play call similar across the board, you know, when it made sense. So I think that's helped accelerate the learning curve for Drew. He's a really good student, and I think that's what surprised Vic Fangio and John Elway was, he hurt himself in that third preseason game on Monday night last year against the Niners and dislocated his thumb or whatever it was, did something to his thumb, was on the shelf for 10 weeks, and then really attacked not only his rehab, but the playbook, the virtual reality simulator where he'd go in, and run through practice every morning and every night before and after practice. And he and Brett Rippon, who's the practice squad QB, nephew of Mark Rippon, really good at Boise, they're two peas in a pod, and they just love studying and are the first ones in, and Drew's one of the last ones to leave. So I know you hear that cliche about quarterbacks all the time, but you never know how a 22-year-old kid who, grew up in a family with means, his dad owns a bunch of restaurants, he's always been the best guy in the room, like I mentioned, when he walks in, football or hoops, and he takes this gig seriously and wants to be the Broncos quarterback for a long time, and so we'll see if it actually works out. But if you told me I had to go bet on him, and gambling's legal in Colorado, so I would go to DraftKings and bet there, I would bet that he's going to be a good quarterback.
We got to know Mike Munchak, of course, over the years when he was here with the Titans, and now he's been in Denver as the offensive line coach for a couple of seasons. What kind of impact have you seen him make with this offensive line?
Well, he's not only one of the best to coach it, he's also one of the best to ever play it, as everybody knows, as a Hall of Famer, as a guard. And he gets praise whenever you talk to an O-lineman, whether it's Dalton Risner who talks to us, Garrett Bowles, who is certainly under scrutiny with all the holding penalties last year, the first rounder, they did not pick up his fifth-year option. But anybody you talk to on that O-line, Graham Glasgow came over after 4 years in Detroit, they can't say enough good things about Mike Munchak, and I think it's warranted, right? Most people will tell you that either he or Steve Scarnecchia, who coached the Pats all those years, are the two best O-line coaches in football. So the Broncos, it was just kind of dumb luck. Munchak was interviewed as a head coaching candidate. His contract was up in Pittsburgh, and his daughter and granddaughter live in Denver, like 10 minutes from the facility. So it wasn't that John Elway made this great sales pitch or Vic Fangio as he was putting the staff together. It's that just by virtue of where his daughter lived, he's spending at least a few years here teaching Garrett Bowles how to not hold and how to become a better left tackle. And Bowles has put on 10 pounds, and I'm not saying he's going to the Pro Bowl, but he played a lot better in the final five games. Some of that had to do with Drew being out there, I think, and running away rather than just sticking in the pocket, going out and making plays. So it's not on Bowles to hold a guy around the shoulders or twist him away and get flagged for 15 yards or 10 yards rather. But Munchak's, I don't know if this O-line ends up looking really good and they put up big numbers on offense, which is something they haven't done, obviously, since Peyton Manning was here, and really the year before they won the Super Bowl, midway through before he got hurt, was the last time this offense really put up numbers. If they start doing that and they're in the mid to high 20s and 30s, then Munchak, his credit needs to be, put right up next to Pat Shurmur's in terms of who has the most impact on what they do.
Last thing, you mentioned a lot of tight ends, but they drafted Noah Fant to obviously be a difference maker. What is realistic for him this season? I think he had 40 catches last year and 3 touchdowns. Is he going to be a bigger part of the offense? What are they expecting from Noah Fant?
Okay, so I'll give you this anecdote. It was just kind of dumb luck. I told you I've already had a couple fantasy drafts. So I was taping with Jake Butt yesterday because he's such a good story and a fan favorite, and everybody's pulling for him. We're taping for the Broncos Daily podcast that I put out every morning. And isn't because it was a podcast, I go, hey Jake, I need to stop you for a second. I'm almost done with this fantasy draft. I haven't taken a tight end. Noah Fant's there. I think Hockenson was there, a couple other tight ends. I said, how much is Noah going to be a part of this offense? Because every time I look up, you're with the ones, Vanette's with the ones, Noah's out there, 85, the rookie out of Missouri. I was like, all you guys are out there. And also they have this kid, Andrew Beck, who's kind of a fullback tight end hybrid, 83, who's more of a fullback right now, but certainly will line up the tight end some. And he goes, oh, no, play no. He's a very big part of what we're going to do. He's like, you can't look at everything in practice. And to be fair, they had third-teamers running with the ones at wideout some just so they could catch a ball from Drew Lock and to give Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy a break every now and then. So I get that he's his teammate, but you look at rookie tight ends, and we looked back, going back to, I think, 1980, the average for rookie tight ends was 33 catches, 330-ish yards, and 3 touchdowns. So he beat 2 of those marks and tied in the touchdown category. Do I think he's going to be Travis Kelce or George Kittle just yet? No, but I do think that he will give them a dimension that makes it hard to double the guys on the outside too often because he's so fast running that 4.5 40, or even faster than that, I think it was 4.49, 4.48, that he catches the ball and they can really separate. We saw it a couple times last year against the Raiders and against the Browns and in Houston against the Texans. So I think Fant's going to be a nice safety net for Drew Lock, and he's caught everything thrown his way. So I think he'll take a nice jump. I'm not ready to, again, put him in the Pro Bowl or All-Pro yet because you just have to see it again. But there's no reason to think, because players do typically take such a big jump from year one to year two, that he's not right there taking one of those jumps.
It'll be interesting to see how it all plays out in 6 days from now. Brandon, really appreciate the visit. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate you having me.
Yep, enjoy the game. Brandon Kristol, Broncos insider for KOA, covers the team for them, and it'll be the Broncos and the Titans to start off the season. There's a double dip on Monday night, and the Titans in Denver will be the one in the nightcap. We'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Get ready to tell us what you know in about 15 minutes or so. Got a gift card to Party Foul on the line. We'll head east at high noon. We'll bring in Vince Ferrara. Normally he's Mondays at noon. Was no show yesterday. It'll be today at noon as Vols get a little bit closer to kicking off their season. So those are some things on tap here on Darren Donick and Chase. Top 25 rankings on The Athletic. Willie, I'm going to let you get the conversation started.
Well, the which way do you want to go? You want players or you want teams? The Athletic did two. They did the most intriguing players in the league, top 25. That could lead us down one path. The other one was the power rankings that they did for the teams. So you
flip a coin. I'd rather go with the players.
It's like a game show. Game show. I'll give you guys the category. You want players or teams?
I would like to do players.
You guys want players. Well, Jadeveon Clowney is on the list for them as the 11th most intriguing player in the NFL based on him being signed.
Say that again. What number? 11?
Number 11. And I think it's really something that the Titans, who are largely, when you get down to it, a team that doesn't get a lot of national attention for so many reasons – This gives them something to chew on. This was a sexy story that was
sure
a long buildup, right? And you know, everybody was waiting and waiting and waiting, and here it is. And the argument that they make here is that if they use him right, he is going to be as motivated as he's ever been. I think he's got to have a chip on his shoulder. He thought he was going to get big money. Maybe he understands a little bit more what it's going to take to get the big contract, which is what he's playing for this year. He got the incentive of the promise that they wouldn't franchise him after this year, right? So this is it. This is the showcase. You perform here, you get a big contract. If you don't, you've missed your chance, right? He'll probably never get the money at eight. This is it. This is the last year you can really cash in on a big, big deal. Because once you get 28, 29, it's less and less likely that anybody's going to really put the big dollars behind you. So,
well, why would you? Oh, like now it's the light's going to turn on. Now all of a sudden he's going to turn into the sack monster that everybody's thought he's going to be, or he was going to be his whole career at that age. I mean, come on. It's what it is at that point. Like, he won't. If he has six sacks this year, that's what he's going to be. Doesn't mean he can't make a good living in the league, and somebody will always be intrigued by him, you know, and he'll get another deal. It's just not going to be the money type of money he's looking for. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he would have to do something he's never done to get somebody. Remember, he only needs one. There'll still be skeptics. There'll still be people out there going, hey, don't do it, contract year. How many times in sports have we seen this? Guy performs in a contract year. You give him the big bucks, a long contract, tons of guaranteed money, and he just, you know, goes back to what you had seen before going into that final year of his contract.
So
there'll be people who do that. But it only takes one, and somebody will see, you know, 12 and a half sacks and be like, man, that's what he is now. And we could, our defensive players and our defensive coach, man, that's what we can get out of him the next 3-4 years. Somebody will sign him to that. But he's going to have to put in a season he's never had before to truly get the big money that he seeks.
So maybe in this whole I play when I want to play, he maybe has learned he's going to have to really get it going here if he wants to cash in. So, Chase, they may have gotten him at the perfect time. If you only had him for 1 year and you got a big year and then he cashes in somewhere else, would you take it? I would.
I would, yeah. I mean, that because I think that I was pretty consistent in saying I'd lean more towards a one-year deal with him because of all the uncertainties that we've discussed. So if he comes in here and he lights it up and then he goes somewhere else, okay, you had him for the year, and hopefully it helped you achieve your goals. And at the same time, now, I'll be honest, I thought that maybe somebody like a DeAndre Walker would be in development, who's now in Seattle. But you could develop some guys behind him, but still, you're in a good position if everything plays out how it's supposed to. Now, I will say this about Jadeveon Clowney. You want him to be the sack monster, of course, but I also don't get infatuated with those numbers as much as some people. I just want him to be effective on the
disruptive.
Defense. Just be disruptive.
If that doesn't get you $20 million a year, though. That's the problem. He's looking for something.
Well, I'm not concerned about that.
I know, but that's what the discussion was. From his end. The discussion was about him trying to get the money he truly seeks.
Well, and okay, but I just want him to be an effective player for this team. That's why you brought him in here. Yeah, if he wants his $20 million, then he's going to need to put up double-digit sacks, which he's never done in his career. He's had 9.5. That's the career high. And, oh, by the way, his defensive coordinator was Mike Vrabel. So if they can rekindle that magic, which is what everybody's hoping for, then that's good for everyone. It's good for the Titans. It's good for him. And who knows? Maybe it turns out that it's such a good fit that they end up working out something long term. I don't know.
You just got
to see what happens this year. I mean, I think we're always very quick to say, well, all right, he'll go. You know, for instance, if Corey Davis has a big year, who's to say they don't re-sign him? I don't personally think that, but
this is a good problem.
That's the good problem to have. But right now, I mean, you think about some of the free agent signings that this franchise has made, I'll just say since they've been in Nashville, this is definitely towards the top when it comes to just making a big splash.
Right.
And so they landed their guy. Now everything has to work out how both sides want it to.
If he stays on the field and plays, I think he'll do very well. All right, I want to hit a couple other guys on this list.
Well, who has been because the ones that came to mind quickly on splashes were, I think, trades. Like DeMarco Murray was a trade, right?
Yep. Yeah, I'm talking free agent signing.
Timmy, the big splash deal. I mean, Delaney Walker,
well,
nobody had any idea.
That was not a big splash. Malcolm Butler was a semi-splash going way back. Yancey Thigpen was a big splash at the time.
Back then, yep.
Pickens.
That was a splash because he had gone to Tennessee. That was only like a one-year deal flyer.
Was Kevin Carter a trade?
Yes. They traded their first-round pick to get him.
So that doesn't. Those are the first two that came to mind. Were Carter and DeMarco Murray?
Vandenbosch
you
didn't
trades.
Know about at the time.
Vandenbosch was on the scrap.
Oh, he was scrap heap. Yeah, he was a
total scrap heap.
Yeah,
I mean, splash. I would say he's probably going to be the biggest splash signing they've ever had. Just getting everybody's attention.
No, I would agree.
It's bigger than Malcolm Butler. I mean, Butler, we get at the interception, the Super Bowl. They won the Super Bowl because of it. But
this is bigger.
This is definitely bigger.
I mean, Matthew Hasselbeck was but he was he wasn't the same. You know, he wasn't what he was in Seattle. So I would certainly agree with Clowney.
All right, number 24 on this list is Drew Lock, among the most intriguing players in the league this year. 4-1 down the stretch with Lock starting. He's got these young guys that they put around him. Cam Sutton. Did I say that right? Is it Cam? Who's the young receiver?
Cortland Sutton.
I was confusing him with the University of Tennessee. Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, and we just talked a lot about Noah Fant. And now you've got Melvin Gordon running the ball along with Patrick Lindsay, who's, is pretty good. Now you got a 1-2 punch. So all of we're all sitting there going, Titans we think are better than the Broncos, and I think that's true. But if you look at the power rankings, there's not that much difference. Over under is like 8.4 for the Titans and like 7.5 for the Broncos. May not be great, but they're not bad. Right? Well, and Locke, they think if Locke can get to another level, then all of a sudden, you know, they've got a pretty good defense, and now you might have something there.
I don't disagree, but here's the deal. When you start breaking it down, though, like defense, Denver's going to get the edge. There's no doubt. Okay, yep. They're going to get the edge. The Broncos' defense is better. It just is. Okay, quarterback, give me a break. It's not Tannehill is going to get the check mark. Okay, running backs. Yeah, they've got Gordon and Lindsay. That's great, but they have the leading rusher in the NFL. So check mark Titans
for sure.
Receiving core.
I would almost.
This is pretty interesting. This one is a lot closer.
I would lean Titans because I think there's so many with the receiving core. You know, with the Broncos, I mean, Judy's a rookie. That one right there. You know, he's never played a game.
Don't really know.
Preseason, right. So you don't know. I mean, Cortland Sutton is the only big.
I would grant you. It's a slight. They're going to the Titans will get the check mark, but it's not like this huge gap. Okay, what about tight end?
I love the Titans collective group of tight ends, but this is what is the quote intriguing part of it, right? The real answer is how good is Locke? I've told you my story. Like our friend brought us out of the rain at the NFL draft in Nashville. It was pouring. We got to go back in the green room, soaking wet. Me and my son and his two buddies, and we were sitting there, or I should say standing there. Noah Fant was there. We saw him actually walk up and get drafted down the tunnel. The guy that was sitting there for a long time in that room was Drew Locke, and he didn't get picked right away. He gets, and I think there was a lot of question last year. Do they have anything in this? This is a huge year for him to prove that he is the man. Because if he doesn't do it this year, it's not like they're out a lot of money. They could go shopping around and try to find another quarterback. But they let Joe Flacco is gone. It's his team.
Yeah, but for the purposes, no matter what he does, for the purposes of this discussion today, the Titans get the check mark.
Yeah.
So I think, what about tight end? It's close, slight check mark, Titans? Agree?
Slight. Yeah. It's just slight wide receiver.
Right. It's very, very close. All right, here's the last one. Well, here's second to last. How about offensive line?
Titans, no doubt.
Titans.
No doubt? With Mike Munchak as the coach. You realize wherever Mike Munchak is, they usually have the best offensive line or one of the best.
He's like Mitch Korn.
It's right. Exactly. That's a great example.
That's a good point.
That's a great example.
But I
think what we're getting at is this is not some shoe-in where the Titans should go in there and just roll over the Broncos, right? If you believe that. I think they're the better team, but it's not a gimme to go over there and win.
And they have some new pieces, so I lean to the Titans because of, I mean, they know what they have. I mean, it's the devil.
I keep using the same word, slight lean Titans. So I guess to your point, Willie, bringing this up from the get-go, when I said, hey, on paper, the Titans, now you start going through this, you're right, it's pretty close. Now, the Titans are going to still win the discussion piece of on paper. They have a better roster. But it's not like there's a big gap. Like when you keep using the word slight lean, checkmark Titans, it's tough. All right, last one was kicker. Who do you give the kicking advantage to?
I mean, Brandon McManus has been pretty solid for them.
Yeah.
They're pretty solid for them. I'd probably just because of...
Guskowski has been very solid his career, too, but
he has.
We have no idea what he's going to look like here.
How's that hip? I mean, I got to go McManus. Right now, today, because of the unknowns, I mean, this whole conversation...
He's the more sure thing, no question.
This whole conversation has changed because we have something, or don't have something, I should say, that this hadn't been the case before. There were no preseason games, so you couldn't see any of these guys.
That's right.
You have no idea any of these guys look like.
Right.
We started this conversation with Drew Locke. I can remember.
Right. No, we started the conversation of the most 25 intriguing players.
No,
now we've gone Jimmy the Greek and Brent Musburger, a checklist of who's got the advantage of each position group.
Willie, next segment you can have your top 25.
No, next segment we're doing this is what I know.
That too. That's what you know. That you can know that. But Drew Locke, I remember Ryan and I got into it on the rundown because we were doing some segment on quarterbacks and he brought up Drew Locke. I'm like, "Yeah, he sucks, whatever." And he was like, "What?" He was 4-1 down the stretch. I'm not sold. I could be completely wrong. I'm just John Elway has not hit on a quarterback yet since he's been there, except for Peyton.
I think it's very premature, though, to say he sucks. That is very premature. He may turn out not to be the guy, but his there was a stretch at the end of the year where I think it's quite a stretch to now say he sucks. I think that's going a little too far. He may end up not being the guy. But I think for today's purposes, there's probably more hope that he is the guy than that there isn't.
It's fair. And that's what I was going to say, that maybe I was a little too quick to use the words he sucks with that argument. But I'm just not sold yet. I got to see more of it. And you can make there are some people that are going to make the same argument with Tannehill of, it did it for a year, do it again. Totally understand. But with a young quarterback and you've changed offensive coordinators yet again, I got to see it. He's got to go out there and prove it to me. Young receiving core, so I'm gonna take the jury still out on Drew Locke. But that's just me.
We're gonna come back and tell you what we know. I'm gonna tell you something about DeAndre Hopkins and the captain Roman Josi. That's what I know. You're also gonna tell us what you know. We've got a gift card. $25 to Party Foul on the line. So we want your interaction. 615-737-1025. That's on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Some things you just know.
I have to know.
Do you think everybody knows?
When you know, you just know. It's time to set the record straight. Join the fun on This Is What I Know with Darren Donick and Chase.
All right, get on the ESPN 102.5 The Game phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. The best to WIC, $25 gift card to Party Foul. And if you don't bring it, I'm taking it, because I'm going to bring it. Let's start with DeAndre Hopkins, who I drafted yesterday in our fantasy draft, or Sunday. The Arizona Cardinals, according to Ian Rapoport, sources are telling him they are set to give him a 2-year contract extension worth $54.5 million.
Hello.
27.25 per year, 42.75 guaranteed at signing. This would be the highest paid non-quarterback contract in the league. How about that? A receiver making $27 million a year. He goes on to say that the last year is voidable, though, which could turn this contract into a 1-year deal worth $39.5 million. How about that? So DeAndre Hopkins just got paid. The other thing that I know, congratulations to Captain Roman Josi. Nope, it's not the Norse yet. We didn't know. Nope, it's for him and his bride, his wife. They are expecting their first child. They are going to have a baby. So congratulations to Roman Josi.
Congrats, Josi. Cap.
That's what I know.
Saw that over the weekend, and also Austin Watson. And Jen expecting
number
their
two.
Second. Yeah, so a couple of baby announcements for the Preds. All right, Willie, you next, or you want me to go?
I'll go. This is what I know. There were some college football teams that were not ready to play a game this past weekend. They didn't look so good.
Really?
You
think Navy was MTSU, yikes. Eastern Kentucky.
Yikes. Oh, boy. It was rough. Now, maybe just the other teams were that much ready, but I have wondered, with all of the complications and struggles and challenges to just get your team out there and get the work in. What teams will be able to get through that and be prepared and be sharp on the field? I just think it probably made a lot of sense for the SEC. It's looking smarter and smarter to back the season up as much as you possibly could. So the teams that started when we're accustomed seeing the start of the college football season, I mean, I guess you have to say that Marshall and Army, they looked like the best version of themselves. Army looked like Army. Maybe that was the biggest thing, but it just dawned on me how much quality practice has really gotten done in a lot of these places, and what will we see the effects of that when we start seeing more and more teams start to play? That's what I know.
The games have been very lopsided.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. You can tell who's gotten more work in, for sure. This is what I know, and I got two of them. And this is not a lecture. This is actually, I'm going to go, okay, all right. I saw a lot of pictures and video of the weekend, of the Labor Day weekend, of Broadway. And there were a lot of people out. We know that we have moved into another modified phase two, so bars are allowed to be open at some, you know, it's very limited, but outside and inside. But what I saw, even though there were a lot of people downtown, everybody had a mask on. I saw masks, a lot of masks. And so it made me think, all right, because I've been sitting here going, let's try some things. Let's leave it up to people. Let's try to be adults and do this the right way. At least the number of people that I saw downtown, I saw wearing masks. That's what I saw. You may have different pictures. I don't know. But everything I saw a lot of masks. So that at least gave me a little bit of encouragement. But let's see what happens moving forward from that. So that's one thing that I know.
I'm with you. I saw the same thing. Because you first see that picture of downtown, and I know they had to, they had to stop the traffic, right? They had to divert the cars because there was just to have more space. But when they zoomed in closer and they had the reporters down there, I was excited about the number of masks I saw. That was good.
Yep. And
that's
what
we want, right?
Right.
Wear the mask, do what you're supposed to do, and you should be able to go out.
I've even seen a report that that the city is now considering closing Broadway to traffic on the weekends, which I think should have been done a long time ago. But I think that's interesting to look at as well. So that's one thing that I know. The other thing that I know that I literally just saw during the break, and I wanted to bring this up because I will tie it to Nashville, the Auto Club Speedway, which is just outside of L.A. in California. It's a 2-mile speedway that NASCAR races on once a year. They used to go there twice a year, and everybody thought it would be awesome, and they don't get the crowds. They've never done anything like this before, but it's being reported by The Athletic that they're going to convert this 2-mile speedway, borderline super speedway, into a 1/2-mile short track. I don't know how they're going to do this, but that's the report, and there's supposed to be an official announcement that that's what they're going to do, that they're going to convert this into a short track. Now, how do I relate this to Nashville? There's been a clamoring in the NASCAR community for more short tracks, because currently they have 3 on the schedule. This would make 4. Nashville, get off your rear end. Get the fairgrounds done. Be the 5th. Don't let somebody take your spot. Yes, the Cup Series is coming out to Gladeville. Very excited about that. But add a second race. Make it be the fairgrounds. Because now you're seeing creativity. You're seeing Auto Club Speedway go, all right, don't want to lose our date, so let's make this a short track. Maybe more people will come. I'm just saying. Get off your rear end. Let's get this done. That's what I know.
All right. Now we want to hear from you. Phone line, text line, open. Driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. 737-1025. Tell us what you know. It's open-ended. It's very easy, just like what we put out there. $25 gift card. The Party Foul is on the line.
Yes. We have a text, but I can't read it on the air. So it's about Odell Beckham, and we're just not going to go there. So,
okay.
Thank you, Chase.
Yeah, we're just not going to do that. So make it arable.
Yeah. That always helps. Yes, we're not going to read it.
No.
We're going to go east and talk with Vince Ferrara coming up at noon. So that is coming up very shortly. Also, hear a little bit from the president and CEO of the Titans, who has been speaking with the media, and find out some things. Burke Nihil has been speaking with the media about whether they'll be able to have fans in the stands at Nissan Stadium in October, where they are on St. Thomas Sports Park and the expansion over there. Employees, what they've been doing, what Amy Adams Strunk has been doing to avoid layoffs and furloughs. So we'll check in on that also in the third hour as well. So is it time for Willie to give the speech, or, I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, we usually do this on Monday. It's Tuesday. We didn't have a show yesterday. So, yeah, I think Willie's going to need to give the speech, or we just go on to Vince.
Yeah. I like I said, I'll use it, man.
I know you will.
I'll use that gift card. So
I know you will. We knew a lot of stuff. We knew a lot today.
We did. And you had all weekend, and actually for more than a week to collect something, to know something. It's not that hard. Come on. You got to be kidding me. Everybody should be excited. All the sports is going on. But that's fine. I guess we'll just pocket it. That works for me.
Yeah, more on this Auto Club Speedway. So NASCAR owns the track, and they have submitted this proposal to San Bernardino County that would say they'd start construction after the race in 2021, would have it ready for 2022, and would not skip a date on the schedule. That's unreal. I mean, this has never been done before. A 2 mile to a half mile. Unreal.
That is definitely different. In fact, is there any example of that anywhere?
No, none. None that I can think of.
I can't either. All right, we'll come back. We'll bring in Vince Ferrara from WNML, the sports animal, to start the third hour. It's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.